imposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on cover schemes for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Preparations are concealed, not public. Things are buried, not headlined. The centers are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives, oblivious. Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country. The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Setting a shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
Alrighty, folks. Welcome once again to the Cold Reality Report. This is Clint Richardson filling in for Shaliak today. And a very special guest with me that we'll be bringing on here shortly by the name of Patrick Jordan. Patrick used to join me at my radio show on RBN. Special thanks to Jules and to Shaliak for allowing me this little platform. Always good to be back in the radio sphere. Today, we're going to be talking about something that is dear to my heart. I've spent a lot of time, a lot of countless hours going through research, going through government studies, all the official studies on a subject that we we call prions and the prion disease. Now, if you're not familiar with prion disease, you really should be. It's the plague of the 21st and 22nd century. It is absolutely one of the most incredible stories you will ever hear. It might sound like fiction, in fact, when you hear it, but it is not. I assure you. What happened to me? First of all, let's talk about this, because there's all this, the media, the entertainment apparatus out there. It's very, very wonderful at taking a subject that is actually a real subject and turning it into a fictional, nonsensical piece of crap. And that's what the media has done with the concept of zombies. Now, what is a zombie really? When we look in the actual definitions and history of what people have referred to as a zombie, we don't find the quote-unquote undead. We don't find rotting flesh walking around trying to eat people and that sort of thing. No. It's nothing so grandiose. In fact, it's a little disease that we like to call prion disease. And we'll get into that. And that, in fact, we are pretty much walking around as potential zombies because of prion disease. What is a zombie, though? Now, a zombie, dictionary.com, just your random dictionary, says a zombie is a person who is or appears to be lifeless, apathetic, or totally lacking in independent judgment. Someone that you might call an automaton. Now, okay, does that say dead? No, appears to be lifeless. Or is lifeless because their brain has been eaten out by literally brain-eating prions. Well, I won't say eating, but we'll discuss that in a bit. Okay, so there's one definition. Someone totally lacking in independent judgment. Well, you could say societally that we're walking around a bunch of public-minded zombies, but that's not what we're referring to either, a bunch of idiots even. But no, we're talking about something else. We're talking about something that is actually causing people to start acting in a different way, something that is causing what we call in modern times a disease that we know as dementia. Now, if you look up dementia, you're going to find all kinds of things, from autism to the spectrum disorder, as they call it, to Alzheimer's, to Parkinson's, all kinds of different things. All of those, my friends, I'm here to tell you today, have to do with prions, prion disease. This, again, is a pretty much, if you want to be realistic, a man-made, if you will, or at least a man shared by the needle, disease. And that's what's so important, is that we keep injecting ourselves with these vaccinations, eating foods that, as we know, just so we understand, if you're not familiar with what a prion is or what prion disease is, well, then think mad cow disease. Now, could we call a cow a zombie? Well, so the cow's not dead, and yet there it is, staggering, unable to control some of its actions, doing things that a cow just shouldn't do. Wikipedia. Let's see, the World English Dictionary, actually that was the definition for World English Dictionary. Dictionary.com actually says, informal, is a zombie is a person whose behavior or responses are wooden, listless, or seemingly rote, an automaton, or an eccentric or peculiar person. So again, we're not talking about dead people here. No, 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 no one but Hollywood and, well, a lot of Jewish authors talk about death in that respect of the zombie. The term zombie from Wikipedia is often figuratively applied to describe a hypnotized person. Hypnotized person, bereft of consciousness or self-awareness, yet ambulant and able to respond to surrounding stimuli. Now, that's not a dead person. No. No, in fact, if you're dead, you're no longer a person. So, again, we're talking about something that causes people. Here you have a perfect example of an animalistic instinct, basically, responding to stimuli. Now, how does that apply? How did many years ago, out of sheer irony and what led me to an incredible journey with my guest today, Patrick Jordan, I started reading a book, and the book was called Deadly Feasts, Tracking the Secrets of a Terrifying New Plague by Richard Rhodes. Now, Richard Rhodes is a Pulitzer Prize winner, and I just wanted to read you the insert from his book just because it'll give you a little background into what we're going to be talking about today, a little timeline, although we'll certainly expand on that timeline. And this book doesn't include a little prehistory that we'll get into with the Vista virus. But let me just read this again from Deadly Feasts. This was a book that was printed in the 80s, warning about a future, basically, zombie apocalypse, although it doesn't say that outright. It says a future plague. It lurks in the meat we eat, undetectable. It incubates for years. It kills by eating holes in people's brains so that they stagger and collapse and lose their minds. It's 100% fatal, and it's already abroad in America. Deadly Feasts reads like a Michael Crichton thriller, but it's a documented fact, bringing sober early warning of a new threat to our very lives that every one of us needs to heed. In this brilliant and gripping medical detective story, Pulitzer Prize winner author Richard Rhodes follows the daring explorations of maverick scientists as they track and emerge the deadly stealth maladies known as prion diseases. Strange new disease agents unlike any other known on Earth. Mad cow disease is just one. Besides hundreds of thousands of cattle, young people in Britain and France have already died from it, died from eating beef. We'll expand on that a bit, too. Beginning with the cannibal feast in New Guinea, only a few decades ago, that was in the 80s, so that was in the 60s, actually, that killed everyone who partook. Roads showed this mysterious group of human and animal diseases spreading gradually throughout the world, infecting and killing laboratory animals, patients in surgery, herds of sheep, cattle, mink, deer, and elk, children treated with human growth hormone, and now, ominously, healthy young people in Britain and on the continent. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration announcement in the early 1997 of drastic measures to prevent an outbreak of mad cow disease in the United States confirmed what Rhodes reveals and explores in detail, that Americans who eat meat are almost certainly at risk. Let's see. More than beef may be dangerous. A scientist whose rainforest odysseys and breakthrough discoveries Rhodes accounts, a Nobel laureate prominent among them, question the safety not only of meat, milk, and cheese that may be infected, as well as soap, surgical sutures, gelatin, and even leather goods. Breeding common garden bone meal may be deadly. Now, that is very important, too, because simply breathing in what you use as fertilizer every year for your little daisies and petunias could be very well dangerous and cause you to inhale these prions. And actually, bone meal was banned in Britain. The queen, the Royal Society, or whatever it is, would actually warn people every year in the newspapers, and we found those clippings, not to wear a mask when you're using bone meal for your gardens. Anyway, it goes on. He weighs the risks as well as the burgeoning new technology of animal-to-animal or animal-to-human transplantation, which is something we'll talk about, in light of projections that as many as 50,000 heart transplants from pigs to humans are expected to take place annually by early in the 21st century, with kidney, lung, and other tissue transplants to follow. Deadly Feasts raises the terrifying specter of an ineradicable, untreatable, irreversibly fatal disease whose insidious spread may be unstoppable unless we act now. Well, we didn't act. The book is certain to ignite a national debate about food safety and the risks of new technologies across the species barrier. It will make your heart pound, etc., etc., etc. Now, I found this book in a garage sale. And that sounds great, wonderful. Let's read about the next terrifying plague. Little did I know it would lead to not only, meeting my next guest, who was actually the next book that I read about prions, but also on a journey of research that, like I said, has pulled up so much. I've written several articles myself on this. Patrick Jordan from vaccinefraud.com, who's joining me today, has written several books and is about to write the epitome of all books on the subject. One more thing I'm going to read to you folks from one of my many research articles, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about. This is an article entitled, it was from 2011. The Vancouver Coastal Health Research Institute posted the following article. It goes into all of this, but what we're trying to put forward to you folks today is that most of the dementia diseases are a prion disease. They are not being spread by beef, although that is a possibility. What we're doing is we are injecting and xeno and allo transplanting things into us. When we get a vaccine, we are getting animal and human DNA from a aborted fetal tissue placed into our body, bypassing the very important protective structures, and it goes right into our system. The important thing about prions is that they lay dormant until activated. We'll discuss that a little bit, too. But they can actually lay dormant, by some reports, for 50 years before they activate. And once they activate, then they start the dementia process. Dr. Neil Cashman, PrionNet, Canada, researchers in Vancouver, confirmed prion-like properties in amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, which is, of course, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, very prominent here in the Utah area. And again, this is in 2011. Just a couple little excerpts from the article. Recent research highlights links between the biological mechanisms of common neurological disorders, such as ALS, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's disease, with prion disease. While each of these diseases manifests itself in a different way, the hallmark of each is a progressive accumulation of misfolded protein aggregates in the central nervous system. there's something I want to talk about with Patrick today, which is SOD, intramuscular transmission of SOD1, misfolding in living cells, publication of the National Academy of Sciences, PNAS, on September 11th, says the paper shows that superoxide dismutase, SOD1, participates in template-directed misfolding. In other words, the coercion of one protein by another protein to change shape and aggregate, such as prion diseases do. So they're saying all these dementia diseases do the same thing. The symptoms manifest differently, but what's causing them is the same thing. The results will be significant to the ALS field because it connects prion mechanisms behind the biological progression of ALS and provides a molecular explanation for the linear and temporal spread of ALS through the nervous system. Furthermore, the research has identified a specific molecular target which, when manipulated, halts the conversion of superoxide dismutase, number one, to be misfolded, a misfolded disease-causing form. also goes on to say that aggregates of amyloid protein from the brain of people with Alzheimer's disease could be transmitted to the brains of healthy mice and vice versa. Of course, everything they do is on lab rats before you ever get a hold of anything. And vaccine manufacturers have admitted and it even says so in the inserts that you, of course, never read before you let a wasp, a nurse, sting you with a vaccine. And they have admitted that vaccine manufacturers to contain DNA and proteins too small and numerous to filter out of the final vaccine product. It's one thing, folks, to eat beef that is tainted with a disease. It's a whole other ball game to literally transplant that directly into your body. Are you kidding me? You crazy, crazy people out there. Anyway, that is my introduction to what I call the zombie apocalypse, the only actual zombie apocalypse that's actually provable and happening as we speak. Many of our ancestors, many of our currently living parents, and even early onset children, childhood diseases, many of us have someone that is suffering from a prion disease. We don't even hardly know it. Anyway, from vaccinefraud.com, author of, I don't know how many books now, Patrick Jordan has three new books out that he has just put out on subjects that are very similar, although different. And his fourth book is going to be entitled The Prion Agenda, which is why we're talking about this today, not to mention it's probably the most important subject ever. Patrick Jordan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Clint. Hi, everybody.
So, my friend, first of all, it's so good to talk to you and catch up with you. I've been sort of a hermit as I've been writing my, you know, doing my own research tome. But this will be a good refresher for me. Let's talk about this thing. I wanted you to start, you know, we just read from this very, very well-respected institution that, plus the National Academy of Sciences, that the superoxide dismutase number one, SOD, is being affected. Tell us about SOD. Tell us what SOD actually does in the body and why it's so important and how that's altering people's whole lives, basically.
Okay, so what I'm about, Clint, is pursuing reality. And when I listen to alternative media, when I study alternative medicine, I see the equivalence of used car salesmen. Oh my God, Clint, you need antioxidants. And of course, everybody, like a school of fish, if you ever seen like the undersea movies, you know, the shark will come at like a school of mackerel. And they're very shiny fish. They got like mirror, you know, on their sides. And all of a sudden they'll flash over to the left. And then another shark will come from another direction, and all of a sudden they'll flash over to right. And of course what the sharks are doing is they're herding the school of fish right into the jaws of their buddies that are waiting, you know, in a different part of the ocean. And because I know nature, I know how things operate, I'm listening to all this BS about, man, you need antioxidants. And I'm going, okay, maybe if it's true, you know, not even starting with their premise, if it's true, why? And it was your work in one of your blogs that had taken the sum total of my work and harmonized it to the realization of, well, we need antioxidants because they turned this thing, this master antioxidant. It's a thing that we all need just for, you know, perfectly working bodies called superoxide dismutase. We need that to function. And you just read, they turned it into a freaking weapon. They turned it into a prion manufacturing machine. So, of course, alternative medicine, and this is because, you know, you're all about the law and legal systems. There's a thing when you go to court, they ask you, do you swear to tell the truth? Okay, that's fair up front. The whole truth and nothing but the truth. And this is where we're caught, Clint, is they told the truth. You really do need antioxidants. But they didn't tell you the part where the shark snuck up from behind and took a chunk out of your ass. And the reason is because we turned your best antioxidant into a prion-generating weapon. And I got that from your work.
Well, it's scary. You know, one of your premises, which people would say, oh, that's conspiracy theory, and of course you want to jab them in the eyes. But, you know, it's that everything can be weaponized. You know, you think about it, water can be weaponized. Anything can be weaponized.
Mm-hmm.
And, so, at this point, let's talk about that, because basically your theory, if I was to give one outstanding theory or theorem that has been proved 20 times over in your work, is a little something called serum sickness. And if we understand that, then perhaps we can understand what's happening. Now, remember, we're here to tell you about the transmission of something called transmissible spongiform encephalopathy, which is, again, your prion disease. Now, mad cow disease is called bovine spongiform encephalopathy. At least the disease state of it is called that. Of course, it's caused by prions. You have scrappy in sheep. You have deer wasting syndrome in deer, which is very similar to your what they say comes from HIV, but I believe it's prion disease as well. We're talking about AIDS. We are talking about wasting syndrome as one of the very, very horrible side effects of that. So what we're talking about is a direct bodily injection, again, from the vaccine manufacturers of proteins and prions, which are proteins in a different sort of way. Now, to be clear, though, so that we have a little understanding of a prion, one of the things a prion does, it's a natural thing in the body. It's not just something foreign. And a prion actually does protect cells from things like cancer. So, in other words, cancer is a prion disease because when the prions are absent, there's nothing to protect the cells from a cancerous quote-unquote virus. So we're looking at what we're looking at really, Patrick, is almost a biblical thing where you're talking about actually integrating animal human DNA into the fold, in together. And the warnings of that, not only biblically, but you know, scientifically, in every aspect of the notion, is, hey, yeah, you're not supposed to interbreed with, you're not supposed to mix species, you're not supposed to mix DNA, you're not supposed to put anything foreign in your body. Your blood is the absolutely most sacred thing that you have. Why are you injecting something unclean into your blood, right? So what we're doing is, imagine, let's say you're a prion from an animal, let's say a sheep, a scrappy, which is one of the main causes of transmissible spongiform encephalopathy, transmissible TSE, which is the human form of mad cow disease, as they call it. But let's imagine if you're a sheep DNA, you're a sheep-based prion or protein. You have no conscience about you. You only know that you're supposed to attach to other proteins and program them like a, almost like a computer virus, right? But, you know, and all of a sudden you come up and you're injected into a foreign animal, a human, and all of a sudden you find a human protein to attach to. Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to conform to the human DNA programming, or are you going to try to shift and change the programming of the other protein so that it acts more like a scrappy or infected prion? And that's what happens. All of a sudden, one prion attaches to another prion, and that prion, of course, is attached to another, and a long string of happy little proteins all of a sudden gets infected one after the other. They're all interconnected. This is why they say that people and cows have holes in their brain, or what looks like a sponge, spongiform encephalopathy. And, of course, you have holes in your brains, chances are you're going to get Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, or some other expression of what ultimately is the same disease. Now, the question is, how in the hell is that happening? Well, we know the answer to that. And in my personal opinion, it's not from eating beef, it's not from ingesting anything, it's from the direct injections that, again, the vaccine manufacturers have clearly stated that there is absolutely no way to filter out prions or small particles, DNA, and other aspects of that which they use to grow the cell substrates on. That is anything from human aborted fetal tissue to blood, from cows and other animals to hamsters to bugs to any, you never know what they're going to grow these things on. So, Patrick, tell us about your theory on serum sickness.
Okay, so my first book, ICD-999, The Serum Sickness Postulate, I started in 2008, put it out there in 2009. It was based on the principles in medicine of hypersensitivity. Hypersensitivity reaction number one is what everybody knows as allergy. Oh, IgE. So an immunoglobulin E, they say, if that shows up, then you've got allergy. And it can run the gamut from like a runny nose to dropping dead after being stung by an insect. Anaphylaxis. So it's not just, oh, that's allergy. And what What we're going to do now, Clint, is we're going to jump to 2013, which is when I started a series of books, because this book is literally 3,000 pages long, and because the printer can't do that, I broke it up into 5 discrete sections. So right now, you know, when you called me, Clint, I was just like at the perfect moment of going like clinically insane, trying to coordinate 3,000 pages to finish Continuum, which is my last book in the series. And I had to finish Continuum to know where the hell Prion Agenda was going. And as a writer, you know you can skip around, you know, in your own work to make a cohesive narrative. So I had to finish Continuum to know, okay, this is where it ends. This is where I can say I'm done with this series, and then go back, finish Prion Agenda, and make it so that people can understand this complex issue. Because when I started in 2008, 2009, I believed the lie that there was discrete hypersensitivity reactions. You had one, which was allergy. You had two, which was a delayed reaction. You had three, which was serum sickness. And you had four that at the time was kind of like ambiguous. They really didn't call it anything except for like type four. But it was clear that that was autoimmunity. And as time progressed, because this is what we do, you know, people like you and me at our level, you gather data and knowledge and wisdom, like Rocky and Bullwinkle going down the mountain, becoming the snowball. And by this last book, which is my 15th book, Continuum, I saw it for what it was. And you've alluded to this early in the show. What we have uncovered, and I'm saying you and me and what I call my research team, they're saying that Alzheimer's, prion disease, Parkinson's, prion disease, autism, prion disease, diabetes, prion disease, pancreatic cancer, as you alluded to, prion disease. And I can tell you why. I've got this continuum. I've got this single golden thread to explain how they could say that, yeah, you know what, we're going to recharacterize Alzheimer's as type 3 diabetes. And the average mind might go, how the hell could they do that? Well, because it's all freaking prion disease. Everything. Now, I want you and the listeners to understand that, because, you know, I took notes before the show so I could present an idea in hopefully a cohesive manner. All diseases are prion disease. All of them. Who has prion disease? Everybody. So what I came to the show with, Clint, was a quote from Rondi Chen. It's a fellow that teaches snake fist drunken boxing. So drunken kung fu, one of the highest art forms out there. And it's the best quote in the world. On the video he goes, don't worry about getting hit. Because by the time you worry about getting hit, you've already been hit. Who has prion disease? Everybody does. Why? Because you said it, Clint. What we have uncovered collectively over the years is prions are natural. They're there as flotsam. And if you study history, and I know you do, there were times when people within a coastal region that had a harbor might be invaded. And one of the strategies that they would use to slow down or stop an invasion was literally to sink their own ships or to throw rocks in the harbor so that the enemy couldn't come in. And I'm telling you, Clint, I can find no better explanation for a prion than that. When a virus is introduced, or I should say an infectious organism, is introduced into a human cell, it throws prions at it like they're putting rocks and sunken ships in the harbor to shut it down, because it doesn't want that foreign thing in there. That's really what a prion is. And the problem is if you can't get the rocks and the sunken ships out of harbor after the invasion to get back to business as usual.
Well, one of the first things you also uncovered, you talked about the notion of the effects of a vaccine, which are called the general effects or the common effects. And I'd like you just to be clear on how things are sort of put under the carpet and hidden from us. While at the same time we're experiencing the problem, the reaction, the dis-ease in our body, you sort of have to redefine dis-ease. It's when your body is not at ease because it's fighting some infection. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, the injection site redness, the soreness after the vaccine, and there's one other. But it turns out that those are the most important side effects of these vaccines, because they are exactly what you'd expect when you're infecting your body with disease.
Okay, so I love our interchanges because we can go from any topic to another topic and have it completely be that continuum that I'm talking about. So in the 1300s, when Dante was writing The Inferno and his other comedies, a pet name for Satan was Dis, D-I-S. So dis-ease is literally the ease of Satan. We got an opposite day thing going on here. So what they are doing is they're taking... And this is what they called it in the time of Jenner. They're ingrafting, and so we're talking allograft. They're ingrafting bestial disease. And see, a bunch of hayseeds from the 1700s knew, what do you mean you're going to take pus from the genitals of an animal and put it into my precious little baby? You're ingrafting bestial disease. And so when you do that, what do you get? And this is what I call the door prize. So serum sickness is hypersensitivity reaction type 3. The door prize is when you read the insert on the vaccine package, it says mild vaccine reactions might be a rash, redness and swelling at the injection site, joint aches, and maybe a fever. Well, dude, that's serum sickness. And one of the reasons is that when you're shot in the arm and your little toe aches, that's systemic. When you got injected and you got a fever, that's systemic. If you get a rash, and here's the beautiful part about all of this. The name of my book, ICD-999, comes from the International Classifications of Diseases as set up by the World Health Organization. And the name came to me because I'm very anal in what I do. I was reading the 2002 Burton Report on Autism, and when I read something, I start at the beginning and read it cover to cover. Because I figure if they wrote it, it must be important. And just about the time that I was, ready to weep in agony for how boring this thing was, I'm going, what the hell did they just say? ICD-999 includes all vaccine-related diseases? You got to be freaking kidding me. It's right in the middle of the Burton Report, and nobody's talking about it. And, pretty much within the autism community, people will cite, oh, Bradstreet, and wasn't he wonderful, and who was the other big guy from England, forget his name, that got demonized, and, oh, wasn't he wonderful, and, look at, Burton, he was trying to make awareness. Yeah, you got aware of it, and nothing ever happened. But they had a drug company scientist, Sedgskull. I think she was from Scandinavia. And she says, they're talking about thimerosal. She says, everybody's allergic to it. So just like I'm saying, you know, everybody who's got prion disease, don't worry about it, you've already been hit. She says, everybody's allergic to thimerosal. It's just that maybe 20 to 30% of the population is able to mount a response to it because of their genetics. And I'm thinking, why in the hell isn't anybody talking about that either? Because when you read the insert and this thing that you're talking about, rash, redness and swelling at the injection site, joint pains and fever, that's the reaction, man. That means that as soon as they shot you, you had a systemic reaction to that vaccine, and your body's telling you, hey, dude, you're in trouble, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just can't figure out why my joints hurt. Well, that's because of these adjuvants that you're speaking of. An adjuvant is something that's designed to make the vaccine, even though it has nothing to do with what you're trying to do, it just basically ramps up the immune system because you're putting basically something that's dirty into your system.
Right, right.
But they use oils and salts, aluminum salts, and all kinds of different things, including your thimerosal. Another one is speaking of joints, is my favorite, which is squalene.
Mm-hmm.
Squalene is a very prevalent ingredient in adjuvant in vaccines, used also in the flu vaccine, which of course everyone's just dying literally to get. And so, you know, you got to explain what happens when you put a foreign form of squalene into your body, keeping in mind that your body also it produces squalene. And this is something I want to hit on with you, because my opinion, Patrick, when you're talking about weaponizing anything, I mean, let's talk about, I mean, how can, speaking of serum sickness, how can you possibly weaponize blood? How can you possibly weaponize sperm or a piece of your ovary or a piece of your heart or a piece of your lung? How can you possibly weaponize such a thing? Well, squalene comes from the squalene, according to the CDC. When they harvest the squalene, it comes from sharks. Shark squalene is very similar to the squalene that is produced in the human body. When we produce squalene, basically what we are producing is our own sort of version of oil. We're oiling our parts, and so our joints very much need this squalene, sort of like your car needs oil or a machine needs oil, so that the joints work properly. You're literally lubricating your body with squalene. Okay, let's take some shark squalene, which is a foreign organism to the human body, but at the same time very similar to what we produce. Let's inject it into someone's body. That'll cause an immune response. Yay! That's all we really care about, because then we can show that, quote-unquote, vaccines fucking work. Well, okay, what happens, though, when the squalene... Oh, a little thing called Gulf War Syndrome. Oh, no big deal, which is, looks like lupus or multiple sclerosis or all kinds of, even AIDS. I mean, it's very similar. Okay, well, what's happening? Well, the squalene comes into your body. Your body sees it. Certain cells understand its presence or feel its presence, however you want to communicate that to the body, and your body actually starts making antibodies for what it sees. It's confused, but it still says, well, we have a foreign thing in it. It's very similar to what we already produced. We're going to produce antibodies. And guess what? The fucking antibodies start attacking your own squalene so that your joints hurt. But you're not just your joints, you have all kinds of other things, because squalene's all over the body. So you're really, really getting screwed, to say the least, by getting a vaccine. The other aspect of that is, let's take porcine zona pellucida, where you take a piece of pig ovary and you inject it into any other animal. Well, guess what? It's a sexual organ, so your body actually creates antibodies. Believe me, this is not just speculation. This is how they sterilize horses. They have a 90% sterilization rate of horses, a perfect, perfect record that they recorded up in the Aztec Islands. According to the National Geological Survey, they have perfectly created a system where they sterilize horses. How did they do it? Vaccination. They inject a piece of ovary from a pig, porcine zona pellucida, and they stick it right into your body, and guess what? Your body says, uh-oh, a foreign agent, let's create antibodies, and those antibodies go right to your own reproductive system. They prevent spermatogenesis. They prevent birth. They prevent the little hairs on the ovaries from accepting the sperm. They do all kinds of things to cause sterilization. Now, I want you folks that are listening to this to think about that. Because what vaccines are grown on, including humans, human aborted fetal tissue, which should stop you in your tracks, you got to start thinking about this in a way that says, what is disease caused from? Why is my body reacting this way? Why am I allergic to foods? Well, because you used something that makes you allergic to a food. They injected that food into your body. It's not supposed to be injected into you. It's supposed to go through your stomach. But instead, they inject it into your damn body, and you have a response. And all of a sudden, oh, I'm allergic to bee stings. I'm allergic to, what's the popping one? Peanut. Tell us about peanut boy.
You go too fast, Clint. Can I back up just a little bit? Because you opened this door of the domino effect of how they destroyed us. And this is what I want to convey with the concept of continuum. So what's in a vaccine? You brought up aluminum. Well, the NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, they did a series of books on just about every damn topic on the planet, but they did some just absolutely phenomenal work on vaccines, and they said without a doubt that aluminum in vaccines actually provokes the IgE response. That's allergy. Hypersensitivity reaction number one. We have already talked about serum sickness, which is a connective tissue disease, and connective tissue means anything that goes through the body. So your blood vessels, your ligaments, your tendons, and your bones. That's all connective tissue. Your blood, even though it's a liquid made of discrete cells, is connective tissue. So, and I know you love this, that makes it a blood disease. It's an attainder of the blood. And then you brought up squalene, which is what, you know, let's just call it what it is, autoimmunity. So they take the pig sperm and they put it in a horse. The horse goes sterile. They take the shark squalene, they put it in a human, and the human goes, oh, my God, my joints are the enemy. You know, seek and destroy, or like the Daleks in Doctor Who, exterminate. And so within like one injection, Clint, this is why I call it continuum, we just hammered type 1, 3, and 4 of the hypersensitivity reactions. And for the sake of brevity, you know, we won't even touch on type 2, which is kind of nebulous. And, you know, they play fast and loose with this stuff. It's basically delayed hypersensitivity and organ destruction. Well, you know, take a look around, man. You get the DPT shot, and all of a sudden you got diabetes and leaky gut. I would say that, you know, type 2 is pretty much covered. But this is what I'm talking about, Clint. It's a package deal. One shot, four hypersensitivity reactions. And it's not like, oh, discrete, you know, oh, you just got allergies, you know, go for your allergy shot. No, man, you got the full spectrum, and it's all, like, festering in your body.
Well, let's talk about something also very important, because one of the arguments will be, to play devil's advocate, if you will, would be, well, but, you know, my son, it's safe for my son to get vaccines because, look, only some children get autism. Only some children get early onset Alzheimer's disease. Only some children get that. It's not like everyone gets it. Look, the statistics are so wonderfully, you know, 1 in 50 children now are only getting 30 children now are only getting autism. It's, you know, I'm comfortable with that. I'm going to submit my child to a vaccine. What we don't consider is the notion of a slow virus, what they used to call a slow virus.
Right.
So let's talk about that, because we're talking about a print with prions again, the notion of the incubation period before they become active. And what's interesting about, we'll talk about that in a bit, the fact that actually, we'll get into that in a bit, what actually activates them. But they can lay in your body and sit there, man, waiting for the right moment, I guess, for up to 50 years and possibly more. We of course, there's no way to actually know that. This guy wrote his book in the 80s and we discovered in the 60s. So, you know, we're talking, let's talk about this sort of slow, you know, talk about the perfect weapon. Inject somebody, and 20 years later, they have Alzheimer's.
I got a lot of my worldview from the X-Files. Within the dark reaches of the military covert operations, plausible deniability is very important, and that's exactly what doctors have. Unless they shoot a girl up with the HPV vaccine, she foams at the mouth and drops dead right there in the office. And, of course, all they do then is code that, you know, she hit her head and that's what killed her. You know, what we need is torches, pitchforks, and gallows to address this problem.
Old school, bitches.
What?
Old school tactics. That's right.
And old school.
Back to nature and rocks and stones. I mean, it is. It's that bad. We've been so fucked over by this. It's just, you know, doctors, nurses, they're pretty much idiots. But the people behind the studies that we see that doctors don't read, it's just amazing. So, yeah, again, slow. The notion of a slow virus or a slow.
Well, and see, Clint, it's all about the words. That is what directs our lives, is what is the word? What does it mean? You know, is it dog Latin? Is it high Latin? Is it occulted on purpose to make us stupid? So when we look at something like scrapie, where the sheep would actually be so afflicted that they would scrape themselves on fences and trees and branches and stuff, It's a disease that was known maybe around, or at least described, I should say, around the 1720s. So we're going way back. You know, if we're looking at how humanity has been infected and afflicted with this stuff, 1720s is back there. But by 1935, they actually identified Vizsla virus in sheep in Iceland. And so what I want to now shift the thoughts of the listeners to is prions are natural responses, natural cellular responses to invasion. They're the flotsam that you throw in the harbor to slow down the enemy attack. Well, by 1935, they identified Vizsla, which you're going to love this because you've hit on every single topic. And, you know, I've lived with this material since 2013. It's like, oh, my God, I can talk to that. I can you know, explain what Clint just said. Vizsla virus is a retrovirus. You were bringing in HIV and throwing it into the mix, like cancer, as if it was just part and parcel of the discussion. And, well, what did they call HIV? A retrovirus. So let's follow this retrovirus to 1942, when the Japanese landed in New Guinea, pulled out their shiny needles, and injected the 4A tribe with Vizsla virus. And all they have to do is wait until 1947, and oh my God, hey, look, these naked natives that are eating each other's heads like zombies got kuru. Wonder where the hell that came from. The injection, man. So it's what you're saying. You take something that looks like a chimera from a bas relief in an Assyrian temple. You know, because they'd always have, like, the bowl with the man's head and the four wings. You take a chimera, you shoot it into another creature, man, oh, hell's going to break loose. How could it not? And then by 1972, they identified bovine vicinovirus. 1972 predates, like, the 1980, should we say, you know, because this is yet again an occulting. Oh, we just discovered, like, mad cow. We just discovered that it might be from prions. Discovery is a legal word where it's not, hey, look, we're smart scientists, look what we found. No, discovery is, hey, this is a legal precedence. We're claiming it like a dog pissing on territory.
Keep it hidden until we can make it novel or unique so that we can patent it.
Thank you.
The cure and, you know, or the vaccine. Right, yeah, it's pretty ridiculous how that all works. So basically, to recap, we had Richard Rhodes. He wrote Deadly Feast in the 80s. He was talking to a gentleman named Gadjudzek, who Carlton Gadjudzek, who is quoted as being basically the discoverer of prion disease when he went to these tribes in New Guinea who were previously infected with a vaccine from Japan?
Yeah.
And so, you know, time, all of a sudden you see it. So here's a tribe who is, the women are actually eating the men when they die. So it's a cannibalistic tribe. And that's what they were blaming it on, the fact that they were the women and the children were getting this horrible, horrible disease. They were literally described as zombies, by the way. They were dying of something called laughing disease, which is another prion disease, where you literally laugh yourself to death, if you can imagine that. There's also some kind of insomnia. I can't remember the official title of the insomnia, but it's a prion disease. And then kuru, as Patrick mentioned, kuru is what they called that disease. That cannibalistic disease, apparently, in New Guinea. But no one ever mentions, Carlton certainly, or Richard Rhodes certainly never mentioned in his research book here, Deadly Feasts, that these people were infected by, basically, scientists or, quote-unquote, nurses or whatever, way before that. And I find that to be a horribly, horribly misleading aspect of it, as misleading as the notion of eating infected beef is. Because what we're talking about is a vaccine derivative of a disease. There is no other way that you can get this shit into your body. Eating it, yeah, like I said, you eat squalene. Squalene is a supplement you can find in the grocery store. Squalene is all over the place, but when you inject it into your body, it does horrible things, but you can eat it, right? So, I mean, if you can get this by eating beef, okay, great. I can't, you know, I don't believe that for a second. But what I do see is the beef story being a cover-up for this vaccine aspect. I want to give you another example here, because this isn't just, we're also talking about allotransplantation, which is human-to-human transplantation, and xenotransplantation.
Xeno.
Which is animal or even insect transplantation into the human body. Mr. Rhodes mentioned hearts from pigs being transferred into humans. My friend, I always use the example of my friend who has a pig vein that was inserted into his body to replace another vein. That sort of thing. So let me give you an example here. This is from page 133 of Deadly Feasts, where he's talking about this. So listen very carefully, folks. Gadjudzek, again, the guy who supposedly discovered prions, and Gibbs prepared a technical note for the Journal of Neurosurgery. They reviewed CJD which is transmissibility, which is prion disease, Christoph-Jakob's disease, which is the a form of human prion disease. They actually call that the bovine, the human mad cow disease, if you will, CJD. They advised that it was reasonable to assume that the CJD agent, which was a prion, was at least as resistant as the scrappy agent to heat, formaldehyde, and ultraviolet light. In particular, they wrote, quote, "One must assume the agent is not killed by boiling," unquote. They point, so this is what you do to medical instruments. You used to boil them, or you used to... So what we're saying is that these things are virtually indestructible. They pointed out that physicians often misdiagnosed CJD with Alzheimer's disease as the form of cerebral atrophy known as Pick's disease, or as so many other conditions, including brain tumors and strokes. They recommended sterilizing instruments used on such patients in an autoclave, a machine used in hospitals that kills even hardy microorganisms with hot steam under pressure for at least 30 minutes, twice the standard autoclaving time. They recommended treating all organs as infectious, even those fixed in formaldehyde. They had found only one chemical, which is chlorine bleach, that reliably killed the scrappy agent. The scrappy prion is one of the most horrible ones in the human body. And they recommend using it to decontaminate floors and other surfaces where tissue might have fallen. Now, he goes on and gives a little story here about a donor who had a prion disease who donated their eye. So, I mean, you're talking about how many people are donors out there. When I die, I'm going to donate my my organs to science or to medicine for transplantation. Well, okay, how are these people dying? Is it a car crash? Great. Or is it someone who dies from Alzheimer's? Oh, okay, well, let's take their organs, for God's sake. All right, but is there a difference? Now, that's the question, Patrick. Is there a difference between taking the organ of a healthy person and taking the organs of a very sick person? And the answer is no, because prions lay dormant in the healthy people. And when you transfer them to someone, they're going to lay dormant in you. So he goes on, and this woman goes in, has a cornea transplant, right? DeVoe joined the edges of the cornea and the woman's eyeball together with stitches of fine nylon. So here's just the cornea of a person infected with prions was transplanted. Here's what happened. The eye healed. The woman could see again clearly. Hallelujah. Yeah. The dead man's cornea and the operation seemed a success. But the optic nerve connects the eye directly to the brain, providing a channel for infection. And the brain of the man who died of pneumonia, who had not been autopsied until after his cornea was harvested, showed the characteristic damage of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, transmissible spongiform encephalopathy, or i.e. mad cow disease. Just a year and a half after her operation, the woman began feeling nauseated, had difficulty swallowing, came to drool and stumble, jerk, went spastic, oh, sounds like a zombie, went mute, gradually introverted into a vegetable oblivion. 2 years beyond her surgery, a masticated and bedsore, she mercifully died. On autopsy, of course, her brain looked like the brain of the man who had donated his cornea, like a sponge, i.e. spongiform encephalopathy. If Arthur DeVoe had only known before the transplant operation, a sickness had oozed from the cornea he had implanted and eaten holes in his patient's brain. Speak to that, my friend.
Okay, I don't know if you have access to a really quick dictionary reference. If we look up the word ghoul, they're like the literal interpretation of the zombie that eats, like, dead things. And so you're saying, because you like to quote the Bible, that you know, you shouldn't ought to be, like, putting dead things in your body. Because the only way to get, like, bovine serum, and I'm going to elaborate on that, the liquid portion of the blood from cows, the only way to get that is to kill a cow. I'm sorry. That's the way they do it. And so you're putting foreign xenograft material from one species into another. You're ingrafting dead things. You're consuming dead things. You've got allografty in the form of aborted fetal tissue, human to human dead things being put into your body. You know, if people are religious, they, you know, where's the torches and pitchforks, man? I should hear hammers building gallows. This is witchcraft.
I can't. I mean, yeah. I what's the that's funny, because in the Bible and in etymology of words, the word pharmacopoeia actually translates to witchcraft and sorcery. Which I find to be very amusing, considering we give so much credit and so much, you know, put so much faith in such a thing. Basically, a bunch of witch doctors out there. And, you know, I have friends that are nurses and friends that are doctors, and I can't talk to them about this stuff. I've tried to bring up prion disease so many times. Every once in a while, they'll find something they won't understand and dismiss it or whatever. It's amazing that one of the things I'm writing about in my book is this agentic relationship. Stanley Milgram, perhaps, is the best person to look at as far as his experiments, where he, he put these people, the patient and the, or the teacher and the learner, and the teacher shocked the learner every time.
Oh yeah,
taught that they shocked the learner every time that they got a wrong answer, and until they basically delivered a lethal dose of electricity, and they went all the way because some doctor in a white coat told them that they should. They had nothing requiring them. Some of them would ask, well, hey, are you responsible? Because if I do this, I want to make sure I'm not responsible, but I'll do it. Right? That's the agentic relationship, or agent relationship, and that's exactly what we are. We're agents, acting agents in this legal system. We go and we get health care because that's what government wants us to do, and we, of course, then are susceptible to all of these ghouls, as you say. I call them wasps, who inject us, sting us with disease. I mean, that's really, how do you have an allergic reaction to anything? Well, some bug sticks its little stinger in you. Well, when the nurse sticks a needle in you, what do you think the difference is? It's infection. I mean, it just amazes me. And you know, as you say, this goes back to the attainder, or the corruption of blood, man. That is what we've done. We have corrupted our very temples. We've corrupted our structure, our very structure. We've introduced these foreign proteins. We've introduced these slow viruses, if you will, these proteins that can manifest themselves, you know, 50 years. We pass them to our children. I mean, we really have done a number on our species. And in my opinion, Patrick, and I think your opinion too, this should be at the forefront, absolute forefront of all medical science. This is, as you say, the cause, or at least the, you know, what's the next level down from cause? It's the receptacle, it's the helper, it's what is causing the cause, right? This is everything. This is the only thing that medical science should be looking at, because every disease that they're treating as a separate disease comes from the same basic functionality of the body. And I can tell you, man, that to me is one of the most, to know this as you know it, and to know this, or at least halfway knowing it as you know it, to know this is the most disturbing thing I can think about. Because any time anybody talks about a cancer or AIDS or anything else, I know, and I can't tell them because they have cognitive dissonance. They don't want to hear it. The nurse that's treating them, the doctor that's treating them, they don't want to hear it because it's not in the fucking medical books. And that is the most disturbing thing to me. We're not here today to sell you any cures. We're not telling you this because we want to sell you a product, although I highly recommend Patrick's work and his books. But for God's sake, folks, we are in an epidemic here. We are in, as Richard Rhodes said, this is the plague of our time, and we're causing it ourselves. And, you know, whether you want to go down the conspiracy route and say this is a medical weapon or a militarized weapon, that's up to you. But Patrick, as you alluded to earlier, man, everything has been made into a weapon, hasn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. And let me make a little segue here, Clint, because you and I get so passionate about what we're doing. Let me make a book plug here, because Lulu, which is where I have them printed, will offer coupons. And the coupons don't affect me and what I get out of my books. They're just offering a discount. Until midnight tonight, and I hate when they do that. So today is March 27th. Until midnight tonight, Easter, they're offering 20% off if you put in all uppercase, basket, like Easter basket, 20. They're offering 20% off, and it doesn't matter where you start. You know, people, you know, I encourage people to get at least ICD-999, my first book. But the three books that I just finished that talk about Continuum, I mean, these are the seminal books on what we're discussing. Prion Agenda and Continuum, I'm working on them concurrently. They're not out yet. But this coupon will cover books that I priced around $54, and there's a reason for that. I had a friend in Southern Illinois that would spend $500 a month just on cigarettes. Man, if you can't afford a $50 book to save your freaking life with $10 off, because that's approximately how much you get off with the 20% coupon, man, I can't help you. Because people have habits that cost more than my monthly food bill.
It's true.
So that's my plug, and I'll remind people again. And, you know, to find the links to my books, just go to my website, vaccinefraud.com. That's the easiest way to do it, because, Clint, when you're involved in the kind of things that we do, man, you used to call me for radio shows, and my favorite story is one time you called me and said, "Hey, man, can you do a Wednesday?" Sure. And, you know, that information goes out on a phone line. The AI has access to it. The NSA, you know, like, puts it in their little computers out there where you live. And then you called me later and you said, "Man, we can't do a Wednesday. Can you do a Monday?" And I said, "Sure." And so we did the Monday, and by Wednesday, my phone line was cut. And right now, I got to apologize. They have to dig up an entire section just to get the noise out of my phone line that I've been suffering with for weeks now. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that we put up with. And so, you know, just bear in mind that the kind of work that we do comes with hardship and annoyance.
Yeah, I mean, I told myself, hey, not something that's going to make me rich. It's not something that's going to, you know, ever raise me to any level of distinction, which now I understand I would never want to be. I've been a monk here, and I've had people give me donations, you know, money for nothing, if you will, just to help me continue to be poor and, you know, and it's work, so I totally understand. And, you know, of course, you're out there on your little farm and, you know, your little land surrounded by Monsanto.
Right.
You know, you know, the whole pricing thing, money is just, I can't say it any other way, but the root of all evil. I mean, it really, it prevents people from getting people's work. And that's the worst part about it. So it's so horrible. But you are literally, for me and Patrick anyway, when it comes to that money, it's literally the lowest spectrum, because you don't sell a lot of books. I know you've told me once you sell two books, right?
There's no way to make a living doing this. So I've dedicated 3 years of my life to a pursuit that will never give me a return.
No, absolutely not. So it's more like, I mean, it's almost like a don't get return. But just to keep you going and eating, I think people and that's and I understand that, because we're all cut up in the system. We all are. But anyway, what was the subject we were speaking of?
Well, I want to back up, because I take notes. And some of the things that disturb me is you wrote a list of the dangers of possible prion exposure. And the list went soap. Well, of course, because soap is made from animal tallow. Surgical sets, bone meal, and that's obvious. But leather, I found that to be fascinating, because one of the things that we were studying in the background is not just the CJD, not just TSE, not just scrapie, but things like transmissible mink, like the animal, like the fur, mink encephalopathy. It's the equivalent of scrapie, man, in little animals that they put in cages so they can scrape their genitals so you can have musk for your perfume, and then they skin them out and they make them into expensive fur coats. And, you know, I'm reading all this stuff and I'm freaking the hell out going, now, wait a minute. Prions are virtually forever. I think you can degrade them in dry heat at like 1,590 degrees Fahrenheit. Don't quote me on that, because I hate numbers. But, you know, I call it poison water, that's why I can't think of it. If formaldehyde doesn't touch a prion, and they tan hides with formaldehyde and tannic acid, so that's why they call it tanning a hide. They use tannins to preserve the hide against going bad. If you can't touch a prion with these chemicals, it makes you wonder if all these rich people running around don't get, you know, like a little prion slough on their fingers or their skin, and then, you know, eventually get it into their eyes, nose, or mouth, and, you know, Bob's your uncle. And I'm just laughing, you know. What about your leather-bound Bible? You know, when we talk, Clint, about everything being weaponized, think about that. All these Christians running around to Easter worship with their leather-bound Bible, and they're holding like a prion weapon.
Oh, man.
And so let's talk about the slow virus, because that's where you were headed. You know, I'm taking notes and I'm trying to keep, you know, a line of thought going through here. What they used to call scrapie and these encephalopathies was a slow virus, because at first they couldn't identify the agent, and they realized that it did take time for it to quote-unquote incubate, which is it's a misnomer, because we're talking about a misfolded protein. We're not talking about a virus. And then let me just throw out there that I find the work of Lawrence Broxmeyer, Broxmeyer, very fascinating, because what he does is he blames an entire range of diseases on tuberculosis. And to not sidetrack on that, he makes very like compelling points about tuberculosis being the spore-forming bacteria that in and of itself can cause disease, but it can also be a cell wall deficient form. People know that as the stealth organisms, the L form, which comes from Lister Institute. That always bothered me. Why do they call it L form? Well, quote unquote, they discovered it at Lister Institute, so they call it the L form. And there are viruses that exist in bacteria, like bacteriophages, and those viruses as well can cause disease. And so I found his work worthy of, you know, deep investigation. But for now, let's just talk about VISNA as a virus. Because what you need, you always need the initiator. Prions are out there. ready. You know, they're like the troops that are on reserve. You got your reserve forces. They're waiting to be called into service. But they won't be called into service unless a virus provokes them. So from whence does the virus come? Well, you know, you're all about the injection. Here's another insidious, scarier than hell thought. At least since Jenner or Salk and Sabin with the polio vaccine, we have been exposed to what are called retroviruses. These things get into the DNA of the host. So it's not like, okay, somebody sneezed, I got the overspray, there was a virus in the water droplet, and the virus got into me. That's called exogenous. It means outside of the system. What we're talking about is endogenous retroviruses that have inserted themselves into your very code. And if Medea Vista virus is a retrovirus, it can insert into your code, and all it needs is to sit there and wait. Because it's fully happy. It's getting a free ride. But what usually starts a retrovirus replication cycle is when the immunity of the host goes offline. Man, we just described the vaccine program. Because, and see, this is what I'm saying, continuum. Clint, I'm addressing every damn thing that you brought up. The parent that says, you know, why shouldn't I give my kids vaccine because only certain people get ill and my kids are perfectly fine. Yeah, they're perfectly fine because getting 60 vaccines as a child is listed in the literature as immunosuppressive. That many adjuvants, that many infectious agents will take your immune system offline. And so if your white blood cells don't mount a response, you don't get ill.
So let me get this clear. What you're saying is that let's just say I'm a prion.
Okay.
And I'm an infectious prion, and I'm just kind of sitting happy, stowing away, you know, for a while, because the organism I'm in is very happy and healthy. And all of a sudden, the immune system starts shutting down, and there's already a sort of a diseased state, if you will. And that, because I'm maybe not, you know, I'm a parasite, I'm not actually getting something that I need to survive or to, you know, sit around and be healthy in my, you know, suppressed state or my dormant state, because the my host is suddenly not quite up to par, I'm going to wake up. And is that what you're saying?
Okay, and you're close, but two of the steps, to my understanding, are reversed. We have these retroviruses in our genes. And when our immune system goes offline, the retroviruses, hey, look, there's nobody guarding the store, man. Let's make copies of ourselves. And so the endogenous virus starts to make copies of itself, which then makes it exogenous, because they're then free floating viruses. And it's that virus presence that triggers prions. Because remember, prions are not the enemy. Misfolded prions are. So the prions are there to run interference against the viruses. So, and what to answer your question, the way I understand it is the steps are virus activates prions. Prions try to disable the virus. They could get misfolded in the process. Now, see, misfolding is different than a prion which has a kink in it to interrupt the virus, because the misfold may be prevented from being refolded by chaperonins or degraded by proteolytic enzymes. And that's where the problem is, because we have inside of us, Clint, these things that are basically little magic donuts that say, oh, misfolded protein, bam, you're better now.
I love donuts.
And what a chaperonin can be is called a heat shock protein. They have different hats that they can wear.
So
what is it that they do? Modern medicine says, oh, you got a fever, let's break the fever. I think that's one of the most dangerous things on the planet.
Oh, to stop a fever? To
stop the fever, because that would recycle your misfolded prions.
Right.
See, the body has in itself all these innate, like very well orchestrated patterns, but what does modern medicine do? It interrupts everything. It injects the viruses. So, and this is what I'm saying. The virus starts the prion. And then so what I'm saying is everybody has prion disease because they're there to be interruptive, the virus, but if they get misfolded, then they become a problem. But we have handling pathways. The chaperonins should refold them. But they're saying, oh, you know, knock that fever down with some Tylenol, and you'll be better. Well, why? Because the prion agenda is to get those prion diseases established. Because this is the other point of what you're bringing up, Clint, and I think this is all hugely important. This is why you ask these questions. If the prions are started, is your brain going to turn to Swiss cheese overnight? Well, guess what? There are forms of it that are genetically switched to be fast or slow. And so, yes, like, is it Christine Lords that you had on your show? Clint? Christine said her son, just like within a short period of time, manifested the disease and died. So there is fast, and they call it incubation time. I hate that. Fast incubating prion disease. But for the most part, it's that slow, insidious thing, the thing that takes 30 to 50 years to show up. And what it is, and this is what you're saying, you know, I'm a little prion and I'm just sitting here waiting to be activated. No, actually, it's activated in its misfolded state. It's causing this tag your it damage. But at a molecular level, it's so slow that even though it's a chain reaction, it's still going to take a while for it to create the amyloid in your brain, start killing cells, and basically hollowing out your head. And that's why it takes 30 to 50 years to show up, because by the time it shows up, man, you've literally been turned into a zombie.
Yeah, exactly. So let's put this in another way. Let's put this in a more science fiction sort of fun.
Oh, I love this.
Because, folks, I'm tell you that whether or not you are a believer, and trust me, things happen whether you believe them or not. Things happen, right? Or don't happen. The word evolution is a very important word. Because what we're talking about are folded and misfolded prions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you kind of mentioned the notion of an army of prions waiting for, like I said, the prion will prevent the cancer virus from entering into the cells. Prions are kind of like a protein structure that protects the cell wall, the cell barriers, things can't penetrate, and infect, so viruses can't get through. They're very important aspects of that quote-unquote immune system. So if you think about it, what happens when that infectious prion comes along and sort of tricks and attaches to it and malforms it? Well, in a sense, that's sort of like a little mini zombie apocalypse happening, because that prion is turning your healthy prion into a zombie, into something that is an automaton that's doing the bidding of the infectious prion. And what it's doing, in fact, folks, is evolving that prion. What is evolution? From Webster's 1828 dictionary online. Listen to this. It's going to blow your mind, folks. Evolution is from the Latin evolutio, so obviously it's a much older concept, is the act of unfolding or unrolling. How do I evolve you as a scientist, as a military frickin' evil motherfucker? How do I evolve you into a diseased state? How do I unfold your cells, your proteins, so cause to change the diseased state? How do I inflict evolution on you? Forget the debate. Forget the Christian versus the what's his name? Shit, I can't remember his name. who came up with? What's his name? Damn it. I hate when I can't remember things. Must be the prions. So literally, to evolve is to unfold something to a different state. A series of things unrolled or unfolded as the evolution of ages, for instance. In military tactics, the doubling of ranks or files, countermarching or other motion, where the disposition of the troops is changed. So you've got a little mini battle happening in your body where these infectious prions are coming in and literally attaching and evolving or unfolding the prions. Now, this has no place in the debate between God and evolution, okay? Absolutely no place. We're talking about reality here. Forget your media. Forget the crap that you hear. We're talking about the truth. We're talking about the reality of evolution, the act of unfolding. What is an infectious prion? A misfolded or unfolded strand of DNA and protein that reconfigures itself into the form of that which infects it. Folks, that is evolution. You want to know what evolution is? It's what the government has allowed the medical industry to put into our bodies. You are being evolved. That's what I want you to know. Is the state of being a zombie actually evolution, not a devolution? Yeah, actually it is. Because this is what is going to cause you to have the symptoms, let's say, from the Mayo Clinic, describing Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is a degenerative brain disorder that leads to dementia and ultimately death. And, of course, they say that symptoms of CJD sometimes resemble those of other dementia-like brain disorders, such as Alzheimer's. Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease usually progresses much more rapidly. That's the only difference. Here's the symptoms, folks. What happens when your body is, when your proteins are evolved and they infect and they cause spongiform encephalopathy or other functional disorders in the body? Well, it's Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, or human form of mad cow disease, as they call it, is marked by rapid mental deterioration, usually within a few months. Initial signs and symptoms are personality changes. Now, remember, we're talking about the creation of zombies here. Personality changes, anxiety, depression, memory loss, impaired thinking, blurred vision, insomnia, difficulty speaking, difficulty swallowing, and sudden jerky movements. Wow, that sounds like a freaking zombie to me.
Sounds like Kuru. It sounds like all the other things in the continuum that we've been talking about. Clint, you know, it's the thing that amuses me about the internet, because I'm on dial-up out here in the middle of nowhere, is that when we say anything, people now can just go to the internet and within seconds fact-check us. So I've always been demonizing Salk and Sabin for their polio pollution of the human genome, and that's where I would say that most of these retroviruses in modern times came from. They basically took monkey shit. And I'm not kidding, because they're enteroviruses. So entero means, you know, the alimentary canal, the digestive tract. It's monkey shit viruses that are retroviruses that were shot into the human population. And you and I have talked on other shows where when they do, like, gene analysis of the human genome, they say that about 8% code for human proteins. 12% of the human genome are retroviruses. And we're not talking parts. We're talking the entire complete sequence of a retrovirus. 12% of what makes up a human, supposedly. And then the 80% leftover is what they call junk. Where in the hell do you think it came from if not through a needle? And so fact check this, you know, because sometimes people need the visual learning backup to reinforce something instead of just our words. You're talking about evolution and what it meant. Unfolding man. Unfolding man was the title of Jonas Salk's freaking book.
Well, what was the title?
Unfolding Man. Huh. I mean, is this like some kind of Yehudi joke? It always seems like the Illuminati are laughing at us with lethal humor. It's like, yeah, you're all going to die. Unfolding Man. So because of our collaboration, Clint, my fourth book in the series that hasn't been released yet is called Prion Agenda, Unfolding the Continuum. And continuum is an idea that is unique to me of the hypersensitivity reactions are not discrete. They're all together. All diseases that mankind is afflicted by, we can link the prions to. And like you said, the prions are a domino in the chain. They are not necessarily the causative agent of disease, but you cannot have disease without prions. That's, I guess, I need to write that down.
Well, let me give you an example. This will perfectly explain what you were just trying to say. How do you detect a prion disease? Well, you know, there are tests you can take while you're alive. They take some samples of the lymph nodes, but usually you don't really look. For instance, when they diagnose Alzheimer's, they're diagnosing a fictional thing. It's not, they don't know what it is.
Right.
They don't know exactly what they're just saying, okay, that's the symptoms of a prion disease called Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or ALS, right? These words that they attach to them are misleading at best. And unfortunately, when you're talking about a brain disease, you can't very well take an autopsy of a brain while someone's alive. So usually you never really see the prion, the spongiform encephalopathy, unless an autopsy is done. But the medical industry's like, oh, well, we know what caused the death. It was Alzheimer's disease. Right, which is a description of symptoms, not a description of what caused the symptoms, just a fucking description of the symptoms. AIDS, a description of symptoms, not a disease, a description of what's causing the disease. Right? So you got the whole medical industry basically going by a bunch of ghost names that mean absolutely nothing, that are different descriptions of symptoms for the same freaking disease.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk about how prions get activated. We talked a little bit about immune suppression, but let's talk about another way, which really scares the hell out of me. I want you to focus to think about something here. Think about your cell phone and the radiation it emits.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
The sound, the frequency that it's emitting. I want you to think about when you go and you have the doctor, in all his frickin' wisdom, these people who get hired after maybe 2 weeks of school to leather up your belly and put us
right
there to see your ultrasound and see your baby, knowing nothing about what that ultrasound frequency is actually doing. Let me tell you about how it is that they, in the labs, that they actually work with prions and activate them for research. Prion misfolding cyclic amplification, PMCA. Is an amplification technique conceptually like PCR to multiply misfolded prions originally developed by Soto and colleagues. It is a test for spongiform encephalopathies like BSE. So they're putting, literally putting, ultrasound frequency up to the prions that are basically dormant, activating them. So let me just read, okay? The technique initially incubates a small amount of abnormal prion with an excess of normal prion. So they're going to take healthy prions from a sample, put them in a petri dish right next to some what is known as abnormal or infected prions, so that some conversion takes place. In other words, the zombies are going to attack the healthy ones. The growing chain of misfolded protein is then blasted with ultrasound. Blasted with ultrasound. You're blasted with ultrasound a lot, folks. Your phones, all these different things. Breaking it down into smaller chains and so rapidly increasing the amount of abnormal protein available to cause conversions. By repeating the cycle, the mass of normal protein is rapidly changed into misfolded prion. Folks, I hate to tell you this. If they want to make us all die within a year, all they have to do is blast us with ultrasound frequency.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? This is the scariest shit I've ever uncovered. This is literally, we're talking about, in my opinion, the the unfolding of man, the zombie apocalypse.
Wow.
And giving us those symptoms that we listed earlier. This is scary stuff. What else does it say? Where was that? I just had it up and I lost it. Sorry. In people with the rarer forms of CJD, psychiatric symptoms may be more prominent in the beginning, with dementia. Okay, so these are people who last a little longer, in other words, who don't just go, you know, who just don't unfold all at once. Psychiatric symptoms may be more prominent in the beginning with dementia, the loss of the ability to think, to reason, and to remember, developing later in the course of the illness. Now, I mean, think about, are we being clear here? We have been attacked at every damn level, in the most minuscule, microscopic way. Now, your science fiction movies are going to show you aliens. And they're going to show you monsters. And they're going to show you all kinds of evil villains that you can visualize, that you can see, because that's what scares you. You might think this, oh, well, I can't see it, so it doesn't bother me. Yeah, see, this is the real horror story. This is the real science fiction story of the ages. This is everything. This is the most evil concept, the most evil monster that you can think of, but you can't see it. You don't know what's happening. No one has responsibility because it's unseen. We have to change that. I'm sorry. I'm so disturbed by this. I'm so, obviously, I don't get this outraged at many things, but this was purposeful. This is known.
Mm-hmm.
They know. The CDC lists it as a big issue. They warn against it. They know it's happening. They've known it's been happening since the jet. The initial injection of this new virus. They've known about this, folks. This is the reality of yours and your loved ones and the entire population's disease state. It's scary to me, and I really, really want to get across to you. As Patrick said, there's virtually no way, if you've ever had a vaccine, ever had anything similar to xenotransplantation, to any kind of blood transfusion, if you've ever used human growth hormone, if you've ever used steroids, if you've ever used anything that is derived from any type of animal where they can't filter out those minuscule microscopic things, proteins and DNA, you are being infected. You are being reprogrammed or evolved. I want you to understand that. This is not a joke. This is not just some science fiction thing that me and Patrick created. These are all absolutely the highest possible sources of scientific information. I don't know what to tell you, except welcome to the zombie apocalypse.
Thank you, Brother Clint.
Huh?
So what you just described, because you and I live in like the legal aspect of this insanity, it's called malice aforethought and premeditated murder. That's what you described, Clint. And the reason I call my site Vaccine Fraud is because within their system, fraud and murder have no statute of limitations. They consider it that heinous. But what you described was that they knew when you go in for your well baby exam and they slather on the gel and they say, okay, we're just going to take an ultrasound and it's non-invasive and we're just going to check the health of your child. This is what I call the Illuminati lethal humor. We're going to check the health of your child by ensuring that the prions that we already activated in your system can now be amplified. My God, you know, ovens. They used to throw innocent people. They accuse them of being witches. All you had to do was whisper, hey, I think, you know, Sarah's a witch. Next thing you know, they're firing up the village oven in the middle of the square and tossing people live into the freaking ovens. It's like what you just described was malice aforethought, premeditated murder with glee. They love this shit. Let's just get a picture of your baby. We can send you home with a black and white.
You have a record of how you killed your child. Congratulations.
Thank you. And that's the you, because you used to call our previous shows on another network, it would be like an AA meeting where we're just getting to commiserate. You labeled the world as pre-assassinated.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about, well, what can we do? Because, you know, pretty much, and we didn't give the warning, you know, bring your... bring your economy size antidepressants to the show. What options are there for stemming the tide of this prion holocaust? And they're out there. You know, I wouldn't be writing books. I wouldn't be engaged in this fight if I didn't think we had a chance. So what we uncovered over, you know, the course of 3 years was, okay, there are certain things you need to do to destroy a prion. Because they're misfolded, the hydrophobic and the hydrophilic aspects of the protein are kind of like protected. So you have to kind of like get a screwdriver in there and wedge it apart so that you can get at the point of detachment. And that can be done with acid. Well, you know, I take a food grade, very dilute, hydrochloric acid as a digestive aid, but that's not the acid that works on this. And I'll give you, you know, I'm building it up. I like to do like a Geraldo Rivera on this kind of stuff. So you got to wedge it open with an acid, and then in order to get it detached, you have to hit it with a detergent. And I'm going to explain all this, Clint. But see, that's only step one and step two. Usually, especially within fighting, you want the 1-2-3 punch for the complete knockout. After it has been spread open and detached, you then have to degrade it with a chemical.
Like,
and so, go ahead.
Like bleach.
Well, and I'm going to write that down. Does bleach work? And I'm thinking about it, I can explain. Okay, because I get distracted, but I got 3,000 pages of data in my head. And so let's talk about this. One of the acids that will open up the misfolded protein is acetic acid. Well, oh, he's talking chemistry again. What's acetic acid? Everybody knows that. It's freaking vinegar. What are they pushing like used car salesmen? Oh, everybody needs apple cider vinegar. What's the other thing that they push as if it is the second coming? Coconut oil. Now, what's in coconut oil? Saponifiers. Because just like we were talking about, soap is a danger of getting prions because it's made from animal tallow. Saponification, detergents, can be made from fatty acids. What is in coconut oil? Lauryl sulfate. Lauric acid, which can be turned into lauryl sulfate, which is a detergent, which can then, once you pry this thing open with your screwdriver called acetic acid, apple cider vinegar, then you hit it with the coconut oil and it breaks it free. And that's where people stop. They'll read all the big, you know, health websites and all the big names that have, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of followers will say, oh, yeah, apple cider vinegar and coconut oil, man, that's what you need for health. And that's the 1-2 punch. And I got this creepy damn feeling going over the deep chemistry of this, because you can never do a surface read. Well, if you're prying it open, prying open prion.
Writing even as it does.
And then you dissociate it, you break it off from its anchor point, because where does this stuff grow? They're like vampire bats hanging from your rafters, and your rafters happen to be your lymph system. So the brain is like the final destination, but they assemble in the lymph. That's why Christine Lord said if you want to test for prions, take a tonsil biopsy. Because that's where they're, you know, this is where, like, the army of clones in the Star Wars, that's where they're being made at the clone facility. And then they translocate. But, see, if you follow the gurus, they're saying, apple cider vinegar and coconut oil, man, that'll cure, it cures mad dad disease. And they will have testimonies of how people with dementia were completely turned around with maybe even just coconut oil alone. Well, it basically puts the damn things in circulation, because that's the 1-2 punch. And I got the creepy feeling that maybe these internet gurus were actually working for the other side, because they're liberating this shit. They're breaking them off from their assembly point and getting them in general circulation in the body. That could be fucking dangerous. So what's the next step? Well, from hard work, I was doing back and forth with Roxy Lopez, and she sent me stuff on the infrasound, because you're talking about ultrasound activation of prions. Infrasound, like, you know, subsonic frequencies in nature can activate prions from, like, deer crap and deer urine. And when other animals ingest the prions that got into the biosphere, they can then be transmitted vertically through another species and then activated by the ultrasound from jet engines, the infrasound from other, you know, subsonic vibrations. And in that article that Roxy sent me, it's like, well, what the hell is this? It was something by, of all people, the U.S. Geological Survey. Well, what the hell are they doing talking about lichens, which is it's a symbiont. It's a fungus that has a algae inside of it. Lichens have serine protease, which may destroy prions. And we've been on that trail ever since. And I elucidated in my books, but you need the 1-2-3. You need to pry open the prion. You need to hit it with a detergent to get it loose, and then you need to burn the holy fucking shit out of it with something, either a proteolytic enzyme or oxygen radicals. And so what is bleach? Bleach is, you know, because they call it chlorine bleach. Well, chlorine is just an incidental bystander to the fact that bleach acts by oxidation. The thing that everybody is all afraid of, oh, we got to antioxidate. Well, we explained earlier, well, we need the antioxidants because they ruined our best antioxidant in our bodies, superoxide dismutase. They destroyed it. They turned that into a weapon. So we need antioxidants to get rid of damage that's already been done and is going on. But what takes out prions? Oxygen radicals. So it seems that even alternative medicine is a weapon, because all the while that your body is trying to, like, use whatever tools it has to get rid of the prions, including oxidizing the hell out of it. People are going, oh, you need to antioxidate. You need to dampen those reactions. Well, that was your body's reaction to the prions. You see what I'm getting at? It's so deep that we need the chemistry. We need the 1-2-3 punch to say, if you do this and this, you must follow up with proteolytic enzymes and or oxygen to destroy the bastards, or they're going to etch your brain out.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, basically everything that's bad for us is anaerobic or allergic to oxygen, right?
And see, we could get into home food fermentation that's done in anaerobic conditions. There are a lot of anaerobes that are our friends. But let me rephrase the topic of this. If you want to destroy anaerobes, if you want to destroy things that can even tolerate certain levels of oxygen, the body has, like, it's a one-trick pony. It uses superoxides. It uses oxygen radicals to destroy everything. We're talking bacteria, fungus, virus, and your own cells. Because when a macrophage comes in to, because phage means eat, to clean up cellular debris, which then turns into pus, the way that it gets rid of your own cells is through a burst of superoxide. That's why you need the superoxide dismutase to shut down these processes. See, this is the problem. This is the continuum, Clint, is your body has all these balanced mechanisms to get the job done. But the wasps, as you call them, interfere with every single process of the body. You got to knock out that fever. You got to get, you know, antioxidants in there. You got to shoot in viruses. Everything they do is wrong.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, we only have a few minutes left.
Holy crap, how'd that happen?
I know. I'm sure you have a lot more notes that we didn't get to. But you've got all your books, of course. What are the titles of your three books that are out, the new books right now?
Oh, the three new books, and you can tell because they're the most expensive.
Tell us what they're about and how they relate to each other.
Okay. This all started because the last book I was ever going to write was Eve's Ill. And I was just going to do a chapter in Eve's Ill called Food Weapons, because I realized how food had been weaponized. You know, that's our central theme. And that chapter became a book called Operator's Manual. But that book at 740 pages didn't fill out enough of what I wanted to cover, so I wrote another book called Doof, Food Spelled Backwards. And as this progressed, it's like, well, wait a minute. This theme will fill out five more books. And so the next book in the series, the ones that just got released, is Human Beans, B-E-A-N-S, Same Pig, Different Lipstick, and Doof of the Dog. These will give you the foundation of Continuum. But then the next two books that I'm working on, Prion Agenda, Unfolding the Continuum, and Continuum, cover everything that we're talking about right now. And they're not out yet. So don't forget, go to my website, get the book links, and use BASKET, B-A-S-K-E-T, all uppercase, 20, and you get 20% off just for today.
Well, dude, it's been really good talking to you again.
Thanks for the invite, man.
We who have such a small voice and such a large pond of shit.
Don't open your mouth too much.
I do appreciate you coming on. Oh, you know what's kind of funny is, oh, that's ironic. I just thought of something, man. It's Easter, right? In the video game industry,